Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
What's up, my Cuomo sexual?
Oh, yeah.
Vomit. That was the worst opening you've done, and you've opened many shows screaming Hitler.
I felt the pain come over the Zoom line from all of you, and it's fueling me right now.
It was a collective cringe, that's sure.
The agony.
Homosexual is a synonym for a sex pest, right?
Mm-hmm. Sex pest. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Somebody who commits. The last thing I saw on Twitter before we got on this call was somebody pointing out that about this time last year, I guess more like May of last year, there was a whole line of products branded Cuomosexual where it would be like Cuomo done up in like the Hope image with the pride flag, because everyone was like, it's so hot that he's competent, mm-hmm. that he knows how to manage speak in complete sentences, and he can manage a pandemic. Yeah.
And
then it turned out he was lying and hiding the deaths of the elderly.
Oh, yeah. We're going to...
While pushing to reopen during a pandemic himself.
Talk
yeah.
about all of this at length, hopefully.
Yeah, that's why I we're opened going to us now. Up this way.
I appreciate yeah. that. That's good. Mine was Cuomo Tallez-vous, which is how play on how are you doing in French. The answer is not good. Yours was better.
Good.
Yours was better.
I
Your
thought
Cuomo
it was. What is it? Cuomo vous vouchez à la quoi?
Yeah.
Is that, would you like to see my naked Cuomo?
Yeah. It's really been.
I don't speak French. Yeah.
That's fine. You've got the gist here.
It's been
a really, really wild year for Andrew, hasn't it, guys?
Boy, howdy.
As you've touched on, we Democratic Party people. You know, resistance heroes spent all the last spring, you know, lauding his nightly addresses, you know, watching him rail against Trump, people calling themselves Cuomosexuals. He had magazine covers. Everybody just gobbled it up. We sat there, you know, watching him on his brother's news show.
The hot brother out of the two. I've said that many times.
And I don't think a single serious person has argued with that, Sophie.
They have, but you're right. You said serious. You're right. Sorry, Katie. Yeah. Please continue. I'm so sorry.
No, point taken, the hotter Cuomo. But both of them were up there like jackasses joking about which is the better son. Meanwhile, his administration is actively covering things up and, you know, talking and praising his response to the pandemic, you know, setting himself up as a foil to Donald Trump. When the truth is that at the beginning of the fucking pandemic, he was not doing anything. He was delaying social distancing measures. He was downplaying the threat of the virus, all of it.
But he learned. He published his book in November, American Crisis, Leadership Lessons from the COVID-19 Pandemic, before the pandemic was over.
Is the book just one page that says, cover up the deaths of old people? Because if so, probably a good book, actually.
That is, that's a good lesson to learn.
Is it just like 50,000 words on how to hide that nursing homes are getting people killed in your city?
Here's how to cover it up. Tabulating the charts.
Yeah, how to bully your employees.
The first 40 pages are just about picking the right shovel.
Jesus Christ. Katie, you were saying...
No, I mean, all of this is great, great, great stuff. The other thing that was recently revealed, before we get to... this week's big Andrew news. It was revealed that over the summer, actively covering up the death tolls in New York State nursing homes, reducing the number by almost half and concealed, you know, the way things were tabulated. And it also has come to light that he personally called and threatened a New York assemblyman, Ron Kim, saying that he would ruin his career if he didn't help him cover up the nursing home scandal.
Excellent.
And
all
of that
is
just a precursor to the conversation we're going to have, which is, as of today, three women have come forward with extremely credible stories of sexual harassment. Two of these women experienced this while working with Andrew Cuomo in his administration. It's not just these stories don't just paint a picture of sexual harassment, but of an office culture that was completely aware of his behaviors, helped excuse them. I mean, three people. I started prepping this and it was two people. And then before we recorded, it was three people. And I'm going to get into some of these stories. I will say that there are almost certainly more stories to come.
For sure.
A couple of these women reference conversations with other women that had similar accounts that we have not heard from yet.
Mm. How convenient. Why now, though? Why now? Yeah. Huh? What you think?
Why it's, now?
Why now?
Save it that seems... joke. Save that joke for when we talk about
okay.
But very funny, right there with you. I have that jotted down in my notes as well.
Excellent. Okay. Good.
But I want to describe
people are garbage. Glad we're on board.
I want to describe some of these women's experiences. The first woman who came forward, Lindsay Boylan. Ooh, this story is really awful. It brought up a lot of stuff for me personally. I think that it probably did for a lot of women who are used to this kind of experience in work environments. All of their stories did. But this all just paints a picture of a man that repeatedly sexualizes and teases you in a work environment, makes you dread coming to work with him, a person you're just desperate to not be alone with. And the worst part, like I mentioned, how many female colleagues have gone out of their way to accommodate that? Maybe that's not the worst part, but it is an awful part of the story. This is from Lindsay's own account. I've got a couple excerpts here. Governor Cuomo has created a culture within his administration where sexual harassment and bullying is so pervasive that it is not only condoned but expected. His inappropriate behavior toward women was an affirmation that he liked you, that you must be something right. He used intimidation to silence his critics, and if you dared to speak up, you'd face consequences. She goes on to talk about the time Cuomo suggested that they play strip poker while they were on a private jet, had her own supervisor tell her that he had a crush on her and that she was a prettier version of his ex-girlfriend and is like, go ahead, look up pictures.
Oh, God.
Women love hearing that, right?
People love hearing that.
Women are like, how do I compare to your ex and like my appearance?
Yeah, from their boss.
Remind you of a previous...
Yeah. She describes how he would touch her inappropriately on her lower back and on her legs, how his staff started keeping tabs on her whereabouts, you know, like trying to arrange moments where they could be alone together. And she has to like wriggle out of situations where she doesn't want to be alone with him. She turned down a promotion because she did not want to be working closer with him. Here's another quote from it. The governor's pervasive harassment extended beyond just me. He made unflattering comments about the weight of female colleagues. He ridiculed them about their romantic relationships and significant others. He said the reasons that men get women were money and power. I tried to excuse his behavior. I told myself it's only words. But that changed after a one-on-one briefing with the governor to update him on economic and infrastructure projects. We were in his New York City office on 3rd Avenue. As I got up to leave and walked toward an open door, he stepped in front of me and kissed me on the lips. Everything about this, it's not, of course, it's his own behavior. It's not even towing a line, but it is that type of line where, you know, it's almost gaslighting where you're like, I don't want to be
the one. It's absolutely gaslighting. Yeah.
I get nervous about throwing it around in case I'm wrong in how I'm using the term gaslighting, but
it's proof that if it weren't for the binary and heavily politicized nature of current American politics, he and Donald Trump would have gotten along great.
Well, that's what it is. He is Donald Trump.
No, they're
the same. He is fucking...
They chose slightly different grifts, but they're the same person. Yeah.
100%. I want to talk about some of these other accounts, too, because it all informs this conversation. The second woman coming forward was a former aide, 25-year-old Charlotte Bennett. Charlotte worked with him at the beginning of the pandemic. She started working there in 2019 and then kind of increased duties. And so she was working closely with him at the beginning of the pandemic. And at first had felt like he treated her like a mentor. But a month or two into the pandemic and everything, his treatment of her shifted. And she started getting incredibly uncomfortable. New York Times. Ms. Bennett, 25, said the most unsettling episode occurred on June 5th when she was alone with Mr. Cuomo. There they are alone again. In his state capitol office. In a series of interviews this week, she said the governor had asked her numerous questions about her personal life, including whether she thought age made a difference in romantic relationships, and had said that he was open to relationships with women in their 20s.
Comments,
she interpreted as clear.
Buddy.
Yeah, apparently, apparently, he told her that he was fine dating anyone over age 22.
Oh, that's an appropriate thing for your boss to tell you.
Andrew.
Also, I don't have this quote written down, but she's a survivor of, you know, sexual assault. And he kept bringing it up. Bringing it up with her.
Andrew.
This is disgusting.
And during that time, during the pandemic, he kept telling her that he was lonely and he just wanted to hug someone. I want to pause. I said that some of the stuff reminded me of stories of my own life, and I don't need to get too personal. We're talking about her stories, but I remember one time I had an internship with a writer, and I was really honored, and I felt very, very proud that I was chosen. And then he started being a little weird, and one day he dismissed everybody else, and it was just me and him there. And he started talking about how lonely he is and how much he wanted a hug. And this is the thing. This is the thing that men in power do. You know, they try to toe it in. They try to appeal to you. They start to, like, kind of lay the footwork. I remember in that situation, I could not get out of the place quick enough. And then to make that person be the goddamn governor and you're 25? Come on.
I remember that story, and it's what I kept thinking about. And hearing about these.
This is just.
Stories.
And I have other stories. Yeah. I mean, this is the one that, like, all of this reminds me of several different workplace environments, not ones that you guys were involved in, but
just within my own life, I'm at the point where I am shocked when I get to know a woman well and she has no history of sexual harassment or sexual assault.
Unfortunately,
like,
that's
can't think of anyone who's I am close to that fits that bill. That has not had that done to them.
I'll share one more. Yes. And I mean, we might as well talk about some of the reaction online because this is appropriate here. I do have one more story I want to share. But immediately I see people saying, like, it sounds credible, but I don't know. Why didn't they come forward with this sooner? Why didn't they go to the cops? Are you kidding me?
Because he's the fucking governor and one of the richest people in the country and the scion of an incredibly influential and wealthy political dynasty. He can destroy you.
Brother is a CNN anchor. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me with that question? If you are asking that question, you do not care what the answer is.
I know women who have not wanted to report a sexual harassment because it was a colleague slightly in advance of them at the company, and they were worried it would crater their career for good reason, because it might have cratered their career, and he's
absolutely
the governor. Like,
and
Jesus.
Also, what is your... We have a hard enough time proving a rape case.
Yeah.
You know? That's enough of an uphill battle. You mean that someone's actually going to stop and care? I mean, both of these women... who worked with him have talked about how they needed to leave, or at least Miss Bennett definitely did. She alerted his assistant, and she's like, "I'm so sorry about this. Let's get you a different position."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
these women were warned coming into it.
Lindsay turning down a promotion, like awful.
It's awful.
And it's the Weinstein shit, too. Everyone around him knows it's going on. It's a mix of people who enable it and people who, without rocking the boat, try to help folks get to positions where they're in less risk, right? Those are kind of your two people, because nobody's willing, for the same reason people don't want to report being a victim of it.
Yes.
It's scary to go up against a guy like Cuomo. He's powerful.
Yeah. Yep. Even if he wasn't the governor, this would be a terrible situation.
If he were like an executive vice president at a Fortune 500 company, it would be scary. But he's the
fucking
governor.
Or a fucking, like, assistant manager.
Yeah,
like,
or your assistant manager or a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like just a male coworker slash colleague. Like,
to be honest,
like any of these scenarios.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who he is. It's hard to come forward.
It's hard
no
to
matter
come
I
forward.
Exactly.
Can't tell you how embarrassed I was after my interaction that I just described.
Yeah.
A friend of ours from Cracked, a good friend of ours back then, had warned me. He'd said, "Don't be alone with him." Sorry, I just got a little emotional talking about it. And I didn't want to tell him. I didn't want to tell anybody. Then they'd say, like, "Are you still doing the internship?" And I didn't want to tell him that, oh, wait, I'm not good at this. I'm not good at writing. There's a reason I was there, and it wasn't because I'm talented. That's what I took away from that. Thankfully, I don't actually believe that in my heart, but that's what women face, like we said, every day.
Yeah,
all
that's
time.
What it does.
This is the normal hurdle. Yeah. And I think that everybody has a barrier to entry into their industries. I think at a certain point, no matter how much studying you do, there's an imposter syndrome feeling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I shouldn't speak for the whole world, but a lot of people struggle with that. And you just kind of have to keep going and muddling through and adding this pressure on top of that. It makes it very difficult for a woman to find her footing in a work environment. I want to also include this new story that broke today. The third woman's name is Anne Roosh. She came for her story is about a wedding that she attended in September 2019. She was at the reception when she was introduced to Cuomo for the very first time, and she commented on the speech he made. And then he put his hands on her bare low back of her dress, and then she picked up her hands and removed it. She's like, don't touch me, take his hands off. Then he called her aggressive and grabbed her face and asked if he could kiss her. And it was a very embarrassing forward interaction. And I know that a lot of women have an experience like this, something where you're like, I'm going to laugh this off. He's trying to be funny and flirty. But no, it's a man putting his hands on you when you didn't ask for it, and anybody justifying that, like, just because you've seen it in your life, or maybe you've done it at a point in time when we didn't talk about boundaries in the same way, it doesn't make it okay. It's the same fucking thing as Donald Trump saying that he can grab a woman, that they let him do whatever they want.
Yes.
Andrew Cuomo has that same attitude very, very clearly.
Yeah, it's Dem Trump, all these people. Yeah. I mean, not all these people, but like most
of
these.
They're all the same. Ghouls. Yeah. Some of them, like, there's the same ghouls. There's a split, like, some of them recognize that climate change is a problem, but not out of the goodness of their hearts, just because they're
more
rational.
Politically, expedient, like, it's just power. It's the power club, and they pick their team. But they don't actually believe any of the shit they say. There's that one Cuomo quote from a couple of years ago. As a New Yorker, I'm a Muslim, I am a Jew, I am black, I am gay, I'm a woman seeking to control her body. We are one New York. It's all just bullshit. It says whatever he wants.
Yeah.
There is a photo of the thing you described, of him grabbing her face. There's a fucking photograph of it. It looks so uncomfortable. She looks so uncomfortable.
Why would you
a horrible photo.
Do that to a person? And like it's yeah
the king of New York
and the reaction to this stuff like you see even if you allude to this is like Trump stuff, even like how he deals with journalists is Trump stuff, but like the reaction of like, well, is it when why didn't they come forward, and these are all just like standard Democratic people. And a fun little trick is just like look at what they were saying about Kavanaugh and Blasey Ford. Look at what they're saying about anyone that doesn't have a D by their name. In this case, it's the exact opposite, they're making the arguments against their current like position. Like we all know this. Everything that happens, it's happened millions of times. We talk about it ad nauseum until there's a new thing, and then we talk about that ad nauseum, and then the cycle continues. All the conversation and discourse about this kind of behavior has been had. Everything about, like, why didn't they come forward? Why this? Why this? Why this? It's all been talked about before. We don't need to keep having it, but we always do when it's whoever's team has the person.
Yeah. I see today people were talking about all of this. Al Franken's name was trending again, you know, and using that as an example. Democrats always just cannibalize ourselves and put our, you know, and like we don't, Republicans don't do this. And also lots of people pointing to like, well, Donald Trump's way worse. Fuck you. Doesn't matter if he's worse. This is still bad. And look,
Donald Trump's not the president anymore.
He's not the president.
Yeah, you don't have to stop talking about him.
And I just wanted to make a quick point on Al Franken, and I don't know if you guys agree with me on this, but I did appreciate, and I still do appreciate that he did that. Because look, he did a gross thing repeatedly. It was a behavior. He learned from it. He was called out. Did he need to immediately resign? Could there have been some sort of disciplinary committee action thing that happened? Sure. But at the end of the day, Al Franken resigning didn't change anything for us. You know, right. I don't have her name off the top of my head, who replaced him, is a Democrat. They voted the same. Yeah. They did the same. Al Franken's being the one leading the interviews might have been entertaining, but it wouldn't, you know, and depositions and all that, it wouldn't have changed anything. But what it did do was say, like, hey, look, I'm listening to you. I see that my behavior was bad. And he did a decent thing. Whether or not people continue to do that, that's different. But I don't look back on that with regret. I look back at that as something like, well, you know what? I respect him for making that choice. That's my two cents. And I understand that people might have a different perspective, but.
Yeah. Well,
it just feels like a defense against doing anything.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's this factor of there are, not that it makes it okay, but some of, and a fairly small fraction of the men who get accused of this stuff, you get the feeling actually recognize that what they did was wrong and attempt to make some sort of amends. And because that's so rare, when you see it, you're almost unreasonably positive towards them.
Yeah.
Because everyone else does nothing, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, Al Franken, I think, might actually regret, like, not just because it had consequences to them, might recognize that what he did was wrong. And that's so rare that it's the Dan Harmon thing where it's like, oh, I think you actually feel bad and you made what seemed like a real apology that took the person's feelings into account. That shouldn't count for much. But yeah, I guess it does.
It does. Yeah.
Well, it does, though. I mean, like, it means something to me because I know that this is a time of change and that a lot of these behaviors have been condoned by our society for so long and that a lot of people are waking up to things. And so I understand that there's a shift that's happening and that a lot of people that I respect, most likely have done stuff that doesn't hold up, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you can, if that comes up and you have to address it, that's makes or breaks a person to me. Like, how have you learned from this experience and how can you, and it's not a one size fit all answer because some people are irredeemable. Some of it is beyond.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and there's also this problem of when the behavior is as universal across political lines as it is, it makes it okay.
Yeah.
In a way. Mm-hmm. Like, because it would be one thing if you had, I don't know, a Democrat who was a rapist and a Republican who was morally upright in that section of their life, right? And they still believed in all the horrible things Republicans do, but they were perfectly respectful to women. Then maybe the Democrat would face consequences for it. And vice versa. But they're all doing it. So nobody faces consequences. Because what are you going to do? Overthrow the government? Yes. But
yes. this is the great.
Yeah, you just use the other as a cudgel against the side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
In the case of Cuomo and Trump, like, they're both spoiled milk. One just happens to be low fat and the other happens to be whole milk. But they're both spoiled milk and are rotten.
Well,
and got it.
Give me some non-dairy any day.
But if it were a situation where you had
Katie.
A Democrat who was a sexual harasser, but was actually, like, fully advocating and meaningfully approaching something like a Green New Deal, and a Republican who was not a sexual harasser, but wanted to destroy all life on Earth, that's a harder choice. We're not talking about that with Cuomo. He's the governor of New York, and he's bad at it. Get him out of there. The survival of the human race is not wrapped up in this. Get rid of the son of a bitch.
Wait, how many terms can he serve? He's been governor for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. It does feel like he's been governor for, like, way too long.
It feels way too long.
This is not a morally complex thing, right?
No, it's not.
And just get rid of him. Even in cases like, the Al Franken thing, where it's like the vote's the same. What are you missing?
I mean, and the thing is about Al Franken, it's not like he's not canceled. he's not canceled because he saved his reputation. like Al Franken will be able to go on and do some things, you know. Anyway, we got to take a break.
Yeah, we got to temporarily cancel ourselves. Yeah.
Cody beat me to it.
You're both canceled.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Hello there. This is Cody from the future of the podcast you're listening to, but still the past of you, the podcast listener. Literally 5 minutes after recording this episode, it was reported that the White House was pulling the nomination of Neera Tanden for OMB director. Given the context of the following conversation, I can only assume that Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. has bugged one or all of us and was listening in. Not for any nefarious purpose, but simply because he's a fan. So, thanks, Joe, for listening. If you really thought healthcare was a human right, you'd be pushing for some kind of single-payer healthcare system. Anyway, okay, back to the show. Uncanceled. Take that, libs. Hi.
Yeah, cancel culture. I'm excited for the cancel culture hearings. I am excited for us to have a new McCarthyism that ruins hundreds of thousands of lives based around fighting cancel culture. That's going to be fun.
And waste so much fucking time oh my God.
I fully expect a bill restricted, like, punishing people criminally for cancel culture before we get any meaningful action on climate change. And that's rad.
We are very much on track for that.
They aren't even talking about the real issue with it. They're talking about fucking Mr. Potato Head. Yeah, it's so embarrassing.
They are talking about
it. It's not like a workers' rights issue or anything like that. It's about Mr. fucking Potato Head, the House Judiciary Committee's GOP Twitter account. Fucking posted a clip from Toy Story of Mr. Potato Head saying, "That's Mr. Potato Head."
Oh, God.
Pronouns he, him. That's what the fucking House Judiciary Committee is up to these days. Tweeting clips from Toy Story. Out of context, by the way. Because they just called him Potato Head in the fucking movie. And he's like, it's Mr. It was a sign of respect. It wasn't about his fucking gender. It's so stupid. And now they're doing the Dr. Seuss thing. I can't even. I'm so tired of it. And they're going to do a hearing about
it. You don't sound tired. You sound very revved.
I'm so awake and alert that I pronounced it correctly.
Did you call? What?
Yeah.
Dr. Seuss? That's
yeah,
not
you
right.
You did call it. I thought that I missed something.
I refuse.
Thought that they were doing a his name somehow. No, but you meant Dr. Seuss.
It's Seuss.
That's fine.
Cody,
it is. I promise you.
I am canceling that pronunciation and you for suggesting
it. Wow. See you in Congress,
friend. See you in the fucking House Judiciary Committee,
right.
Motherfucker.
That's right. Oh, God. Anyway, Jim Jordan, of all fucking people, is calling to do that.
Jim Jordan, the guy with the molesting of the kids and the rest of
that's the one.
Jim, I'm sorry. Do you need to draw more attention to yourself and your crimes? Cancelable crimes?
There's no crimes anymore. Unless you're like a poor person who has marijuana or something. Then,
yeah, that's
then
still a
crimes.
Crime.
Or you can't afford your rent.
We'll move on. We'll move on. Yeah. But I can't. But like, okay, so earlier today, even, in the fucking, Ted Cruz asked Merrick Garland what he thought of cancel culture today.
Amazing.
Fuck off, Ted Cruz. Fuck off, Ted Cruz.
What was his answer?
His answer was amazing. It was like, I don't really know the definition of that or what like you mean by that term in the context of this, so I can't answer it.
Good.
He basically called Ted a fucking weird little online freak who needs to log off.
Ted
anyway.
Cruz really knows how to waste a motherfucker's time.
Congress is doing great. Speaking of...
Yeah.
The COVID relief bill is
trash
on its way.
Oh, yeah.
Allegedly, in addition to enough vaccines for 300 million Americans
to Senate.
Yes. They're working on it. Just wanted to talk about this briefly because
Katie, that's an important clarification because people think once something that's a huge misconception. People think that checks are in the mail when it passes through one thing, and it's like no,
right? That's not how it works.
No,
it goes back and forth. It's a whole thing. You gotta
They're negotiating with people's lives. Anyway, continue.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Well, so one thing that was attempted to be in this bill was an increase to the federal minimum wage. Has not been raised in, I want to say, 10 years, possibly one year more or less.
And the raise wasn't supposed to be, wouldn't go into effect for several more years.
Oh, yeah. It was a slow roll. Much like in red state Florida, they raised their minimum wage. It already went into effect. It's $10 now, and it will reach $15 by 2026. So maybe people like Joe Manchin don't actually have to worry about their constituents, considering that Florida voted to do it. But whatever. Different states, different strokes. Who knows? It was going to be included.
Different states, different mates. I don't know.
Exactly. As a part of this reconciliation bill, budget reconciliation, and the Senate parliamentarian ruled.
Which, what?
basically, it's an assessment of like the rules and the process. She ruled that you can't do that in budget reconciliation. You can do a lot of other stuff. You can like give a bunch of like tax breaks to companies and like. Give it to fucking private insurance companies and so on. But you can't mandate a federal minimum wage increase. And so the ruling was that you can't do that. The ruling isn't quite the right word, because the role of the parliamentarian is to advise. The actual who has like the power in this situation is actually the vice president of the United States. Can overrule whatever advisory the parliamentarian gives. In 2003, Republicans fired the parliamentarian because they said they couldn't do their tax cuts. They were just like, nope, fired. They just do this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, earlier today on a phone call, with Senate Dems, Biden told them, you know, they need to understand budget reconciliation has its limits. It does not. So I don't know. It's there are arguments that can be made that, like, you know, they'll try it again. They'll keep going.
But
they're not going to include it there.
But the point is that they're not fighting. They can fight, but they're not fighting.
They can and they're not. Bernie Sanders has tried a couple of different routes in forcing this, but. Again, the person who could actually overrule this is the vice president, who I believe just as recently as, I don't know, 7 months ago was talking about how we desperately need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. And it is just very frustrating to see quite a lot of the discourse around this, because ultimately it's just a mess. Like,
it's another reminder that the Republicans, not all of them, but the ones who actually steer the party, run for office and get office because they want power to do things with. They have things they want to do, and those things are terrible, but they have things that they want to do. The Democrats who steer the party, the Kamala Harris's and the Joe Biden's, want this on their resume, want it for bragging rights, want to be able to die saying they were the president or the vice president or
and
something, right? Like it's,
they
it's,
want
it's
some real Pete Buttigieg ass shit. Yeah.
Just enough, because a lot of those same donors that put Republicans in office are the same donors and the same corporate people that put Democrats in office. And Democrats are still beholden, and they want to make the appearance of making overtures to progress without ruffling feathers or rocking the boat, you know?
They're not beholden to people who vote for them, and they know that. And they'll continue to go down this route because they know they can get away with it, right? If you don't vote for the people, then the worst people will be in charge. Surely you want not the worst people to be in charge.
It's so frustrating. I keep thinking about all the campaigning I did that a lot of people did. And I thought about this, was it last week when we were talking about the detention centers? Definitely thought about it then. And this week with this, and just all the conversations I had with people saying, like, who said, how do you know it'll be any different? Like, what? It's not going to change. Nothing's going to change. One guy versus another. This guy's less obviously offensive, but at the end of the day, it won't change my life. And me making assurances. And I shouldn't have. Not assurances, but saying like, yeah, you know what? I really genuinely do think that Biden will do the right thing with immigration and like come up with different ideas. And, you know, we won't be opening new camps for kids. You know, like,
I don't know exactly what I said, but
yeah, about people's money in a day-to-day life and saying like, we got to try. And it's a month in and I'm already so disappointed.
Oh, yeah. I can't count the number of people I've seen just being like, I knocked on doors for Ossoff and Warnock and I told people to their face about these $2,000 checks. And just like the utter disappointment in that. And I've always been pretty much like, yeah, it'll be similar. It'll be better. It's good that Donald Trump isn't the president. It's good.
Huge promises, but yes.
Oh, for sure. But like it is, you know, all this is very expected.
Yeah.
And it's just very frustrating. And if you look at, you know, people, talking about the parliamentarian, how they still don't seem to acknowledge that, like, it doesn't matter what the parliamentarian really says. But, like, the reaction of, like, well, don't blame them. Here's somebody. It's like, we need to stop focusing on her as she's essentially a bureaucrat just interpreting arcane rules. Direct your anger towards Joe Manchin. And people like that. He's the reason. And so what it's just a merry-go-round of excuses. I remember talking about
stops everywhere.
Everywhere, wherever you want it to.
You know what? I'll blame Joe Manchin. I'll also blame a lot of other people. There are lots of different reasons and people standing in the way of making this a reality.
You're all bastards.
Yeah, and I remember leading up to the runoff in Georgia and being like, well, if we elect Ossoff and Warnock, that is one less excuse for the Democrats their lack of progress. One less. Not that they won't have any. They'll find some. And, like, here we are, and it's just a very, like, you point out, like, actually, they don't have to listen to the parliamentarian. They don't have to. It's bullshit. Republicans fired them. You can do whatever you want. There are no rules. And you point that out, and they're like, okay, but even if they did that, they wouldn't have the votes because of Manchin. It's like, okay, then why did they include it in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't have the votes, why did they include it? Does that and, me and think maybe they didn't want to do it?
Joe Manchin has things he wants. You can do.
Oh,
the,
no.
Do the politics thing.
We need to do the politics to find out what Joe Manchin wants, so we can nominate and confirm Neera fucking Tanden as the OMB director.
Care.
That's the fight that matters. That's why people care. Yeah,
like that. It seems like people are realizing that the mainstream of the power brokers in the Democratic Party are fighting harder for Neera Tanden than they are to make life livable for voters.
Like, to be clear, that is exactly what's going on. There are deals being made. Like Ron Klain has said, like, yeah, we're fighting our guts out for Neera Tanden of all. Like, why? But like that is why?
Completely replaceable with any one of 100 people.
Just why? Why are you spending so much time and energy on this? Why are you like, you know, I'm not saying that he'll definitely make this deal, but there's talks of like, well, if for Neera, you know, some of Murkowski, like some of Biden's energy policies in Alaska are not so great. So like they're going to like allow drilling so that Neera fucking Tanden
so
can be the OMB director.
Tanden.
Like what is the point? Speaking of like fucking drilling for oil, Neera Tanden, who suggested we take half of Libya's oil as payment. It's just
it's because she's their buddy and this is good for her career.
I know. And I hate it. it's so
like
frustrating
it,
no. To see this happen because this is and it's not even like even if you think like it's not possible. What are the optics of this? Of like doing these deals and talking to senators, making calls. No one's called Joe Manchin about the minimum wage. They're talking about this Neera Tanden confirmation. What does that look like to anybody who's paying attention? Does it look like something that matters? It's just very frustrating. There's more about the minimum wage. We could talk all day about it. It's just
challenge accepted.
Yeah.
It's just very very maddening and frustrating to see.
Cody, you mentioned a little bit about vaccine stuff too in your start. Do you want to talk about that?
I did. I mean, that's Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., the president of the United States
guy.
Of America.
Joe Biden
has said that there will be enough vaccines for 300 million Americans by May.
Cool.
Which is a couple months before originally projected.
Cool.
So that's good. He seems to be the kind of guy who's like, let's just spend some money on the vaccine. Let's get all the vaccines. That's good.
Yeah, it does seem like, broadly speaking, that's the thing that they've been more competent on than the last one was.
Yeah, they're just like basic shit good. Like that. Like, okay, yeah.
That's good.
That's good.
I'm not going to go further than that because and to make it clear,
I'm not saying that this minimum wage fight won't continue or that it's not something they do not care about. Some people obviously very much do. So I would hope that they actually take this fight later on. It's just the steps they've taken so far make it pretty clear that they do not care.
Yeah.
And they're putting their energy, their fighting energy, elsewhere, which seems, silly to me. Maybe we shouldn't get Libya to pay us in half their oil, like Donald Trump also suggested.
Finally.
I know.
Unity between left and right in fucking over a country that has been nothing but fucked over by the West.
Yeah. Very cool. We love it.
We got to take a quick break.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think.
Perhaps. If you want to, Katie, what do you think?
I got to pee, so yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
We're back.
Everything's great.
Yeah. I like it because it's good. No, I like it because it's good. You're right.
You like it because it's good.
Uh-huh.
Robert, I think you're up.
Oh, did we want to talk about the fun thing that we just got news on?
Oh, right. So, by the way, including sorry, Robert, you go.
Walking down the streets of Coppell, Texas after a run and got the news that the governor has declared the entire state is open back up. This comes the same day as news that all of the recognized strains of the coronavirus are now present in Houston.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was thinking about this, and I'm sorry. I feel so bad for everybody living in states like this. I mean, not that things are great in California, but at the very least, I take comfort in the fact that people have to wear a mask inside.
Yeah.
I mean, weren't a lot. Like, I went to a restaurant to sit outside when there was no one else outside and eat, and everyone inside was mask off drinking. So, you know, it's not like Texans have been abiding by the rules anyway.
That's right. It's called independence, Robert. Look it up.
I understand. There's a part of me that's just kind of proud of Governor Greg Abbott, because between the ice storm in which his mismanagement and Texas's general shitty attitude towards taking care of each other got a bunch of people killed, he went a whole week without getting more people killed before opening the state back up and getting a bunch of people killed.
So he took a little breather.
He took a breather.
Oh, Robert, our proud boy.
It's like that time John Wayne Gacy went a whole 6 months between murdering a boy and storing his corpse in the floorboards of his house, you know?
There you go.
We were all proud of John Wayne Gacy
like
for that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
What's John Wayne-ing my Gacy's?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Odd.
So, Cody, you sent me this article that makes me want to light the world on fire and kill absolutely everyone inside it. From Crooked Media.
Yeah.
Near a Tandon or bust.
That's the headline. That is the title of the article.
Title of your sex tape.
Yeah.
I'm rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Or bust. Oh,
I'm sorry, it was right there. Don't cancel me.
Oh.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine did it first.
Oh
man. Okay. This and the Texas nudes together makes me just want to cancel everything. Cancel the world with some sort of robot that eats everything.
You know what? Katie, that was funny as fuck, and you're not
Thanks,
canceled.
Guys.
No, you're not canceled. You're re-greenlit.
Boom. You're
double greenlit.
Robert, as you were saying, kind sir.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around the argument in this, which seems to be that because the Republicans aren't recognizing that Biden won and they're unfairly fighting him getting to put the people in the administration, then the Democrats have to fight like crazy for Neera Tanden, because otherwise you're yielding to the unreasonable Republicans, which is taking what's fascinating about the argument that this terrible article is making. They're taking a very valid point, which is that what the Republicans have been doing for years now is anti-democratic. It's dangerous and it needs to be strenuously opposed because they need to face serious consequences and electoral destruction for doing the things that they're doing. But they're taking that very reasonable argument. And instead of being like, yeah, so we have to fight like hell to get people their checks and to get people the aid that they need and to
election
force
reform
change, okay, yeah. Election reform, climate change legislation, things that lives are at stake, that civilization, we have to fight like hell for that because they don't get to say no to that shit. Instead, they're saying they're making that argument, but instead of improving life for the human race, they're saying we need to make Neera Tanden have a job. Like, it's lunacy.
It's wild. It's
it
just
is absolute madness.
This and like, is the hill you want to die on?
It's like, not yeah, even it's a like, hill.
It's, no. It's like a little, it's like a mound of
it's
dirt.
It's a mound.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous on its face. It's like this weird, like, posters rights bullshit.
It's amazing. I don't even hate Neera Tanden. I don't like her. I've never thought about her until this moment. So it's just shocking to me that they're like, this is where our administration will live or die.
Yeah.
Somebody that most voters don't know who the fuck that is.
Yeah.
Most voters could tell you what the minimum wage is, though.
Like, yeah, they sure can.
It's
or
just,
whether or not they've
or
got the $2,000 check from the fucking government, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
I'll borrow
a catchphrase from Even More News and say I agree with you completely.
Completely.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about Syria?
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah, we've got. There's always time to talk about Syria, ooh. Cody.
Good.
It feels like we
actually,
should address this.
Historically, there's almost never any time to talk about Syria. This has been some of the most frustrated I've been in a while. And I guess my feelings on this are complex. It is good that a lot more Americans than I'm used to seeing are angry when the government carries out a missile strike on a Middle Eastern nation that the president decides on unilaterally in a place where we are not in a declared war, because people should be more critical about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The discourse I've seen surrounding the Syria strike is dumb as hell, and I will go through a list of the things that I think are dumb as hell. Number one, calling it a war crime. It is an arguably, and I think this is the argument I would make, illegal based on the letter of like the Constitution prior to the way things changed after 9/11 for the fucking president to just be able to carry out military force anywhere he wants without an act of Congress like declaring a war. That part, I agree. I'm not a law knower. I think it should be illegal to do that, right?
I mean, it sounds like a rule
you broke. It's a rule that every president has been breaking since 9/11.
Yes.
And I don't like that, and that's bad. But the actual attack itself was not a war crime. It was not strike. It was not what we were doing. It was not what I watched with my own eyes happen in Mosul. It was a series of infrastructure attacks on a militia that itself is backed by a foreign government that is an imperialist power in the region. It's a shit fight between two imperialist powers. And Biden chose to strike some of their infrastructure. And I have not seen any evidence at this moment that suggests there were even civilian casualties. The strike was on a group called Kataib Hezbollah, which is a Shiite militia. These are some of the same guys that we were funding back in 2017, right? Mm-hmm. The PMF.
Well, that's always the case, right? We fund them until we bomb them.
It's a little more. I mean, yes, that is the thing that happens repeatedly in U.S. history. The basic. So do you remember hearing about a place called Sadr City in Baghdad during the height of the Iraq War? You remember that buzz?
I remember. I don't have any information to speak.
Muqtada al-Sadr is a Shia cleric who's got strong ties to the Iranian government and is a dude who is influential in Baghdad in particular and is a very, very smart dude. Like he's a fundamentally terrible person, but he's kind of a genius insurgent organizer. And he and his forces were a big part of the insurgency against the United States. And the fact that he was like this, you're talking like 2005-06, he was a major part of the insurgency against the U.S. And he is still alive and one of the most influential men in Iraq. Which is hard, right? He's a smart dude. And this is because the Iranian government has a significant vested interest in Iraqi politics, right? Iraq and Iran fought a massive, horrific war throughout the 1980s that killed like a combined million people. The Iranian government wants to have a significant amount of influence in Iraq, which is not an inherently unreasonable thing. They're neighbors, but also the Iranian government is a bad government and also does terrible things. And a big part of why Mosul fell to ISIS is because the Shia-dominated and thus Iranian-dominated government that took over and was running Iraq for a sizable chunk of the mid-aughts was responsible for a lot of horrific crimes against the Sunnis, which in Mosul is a Sunni-dominated city. And so, like, the police and the military forces that were kind of they were doing shit like abducting people in the night, torturing them, murdering them, who were Sunni. And so when ISIS, which is a Sunni organization, came in and took over the city, they saw a lot of initial support from the population of Mosul. And I talked to a bunch of people in Mosul who were like, well, I never liked ISIS particularly, but I fucking hated the cops. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, like, this history goes back a while. When the Iraqi government, with, you know, the Kurds up in the north and with U.S. backing, was taking back Mosul from ISIS, these different Shia militias that had been organized and prominent for a long time were part of the effort to take back Mosul. They were called the PMF, the Popular Mobilization Forces. And we both aided, like, funded them to an extent, and also allowed other groups that were opposed to them in Iraq to, like, use us to carry out airstrikes against them. It was a very messy situation. Like when I was in Mosul, they were the folks you were almost as worried about as ISIS, because they're not, you know, they're sketchy people. Although also the Iraqi military itself carried out a shitload of war crimes, as did the U.S. military. Nobody's fucking hands are clean, period. In recent last couple of years, as Iranian influence has grown over the Iraqi government, these different militias have been abducting and murdering a lot of people, including a guy I used to know whose like thing was throwing parties, right? Because like there would be alcohol at the parties, there would be a lot of foreigners. Like, they abducted and killed this guy, probably killed this guy. We know he's gone. You know, this sort of thing happened all over the place, and these militias were a big part of both like that siege of or attack on a U.S. embassy that happened last year that kind of like incited the killing of Soleimani. But also, if you remember in 2019, when there were all those protests in Iraq and like protesters were getting their heads grenaded to death and shit, they were heavily involved in that. And so was Iran. These are bad people who carry out horrible terrorist attacks that have killed a lot of Iraqis, because they are fundamentally not fighting for the rights of Iraqi people or for any sort of political liberty as much as they're fighting on behalf of another foreign power. Now, the United States, in striking these facilities, is not improving the situation, I don't believe. You'll read some arguments. I found an article arguing that this was a good call in New Lines magazine. I don't buy that. I think it was a useless expansion of, or a useless use of force that at most is going to continue this cycle of violence, right? Now we've done an attack, they're going to do another attack.
Yeah,
the attack that inspired this attack was just our attack, right? Like, I'm not in favor of what the Biden administration does, but also if you're going to critique it, understand what it fucking is, you know?
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
why I'm just always frustrated about all this shit.
Yeah, I mean, sorry. What is the actual justification here for it? They call it a proportional response, but is that, you know, like, and was this necessary right now? What's why now?
Was it necessary? No. And I don't think it's necessary because I don't think it will help. Was it proportional? I guess that depends. There was a horrific attack on a facility outside of Erbil that killed a contractor, U.S. contractor, and wounded a bunch of people. I don't know exact. We don't have an exact death count for this airstrike. I don't know when we will, because one of the things, I mean, for one thing, the Trump administration removed a rule that mandated reporting on the number of people killed in U.S. airstrikes. And Biden administration has no desire to put that back.
Yeah, he's not rushing back to. Yeah,
they're not rushing.
We're going to conveniently overlook that thing.
I don't know, maybe, but I don't think the question of is it proportional matters as much as, like, is there any chance that it will improve life for people in the region? And no, I don't.
Right,
that's never
going to be the case.
And
like,
yeah.
How many like it? And like, this is like a proportional response where there's an attack here and here. Get out.
Yeah,
leave. How many American fucking military bases are not here. Just leave. And you won't have to worry about that. You won't have to worry about what's the proportional response to an attack on a place that shouldn't be there. We shouldn't be there. And yeah, it's just some of the discourse around it is very frustrating too, because it's just like it's not just saying that, like, it's more complex. It's also saying it's good, and mm-hmm. this is the kind of thing that he should be doing, and I trust him to do whatever, basically.
Yeah, no, and no, and it's
you know, like, yeah, bombing Syria is good now, I guess. It's 2021, yeah. So let's,
you know, I am not, and this is a place in which I get into fights with a lot of folks on the left, I am not comprehensively anti-intervention. Part of that, not intervention, but anti-U.S. forces being used in certain situations, generally where we have fucked something up and we have made promises to people that need to be kept. And to that extent, if the bulk of Iraq, which is about 50-55%, you know, the Shia are the largest single chunk of Iraq. If the people of Iraq want to be more closely tied to Iran and want to, you know, want to live in the kind of country that the members of these militias seem to want them to live in the country, and I don't know that that's the case, but if that's the way things go for the rest of Iraq, I don't think U.S. forces or U.S. foreign policy has any role in stopping that. Now, if those forces attempt to, I don't know, force their will on the Kurdish north of the country, I think we owe those people something. And I don't think it needs to be bombing anything, but I think it needs to be saying, like, hey, maybe it's time for them to get their own fucking country, right?
Yeah.
As they voted to have last year, or not last year, like 3 years ago, and the United States has been consistently a dick about, even though, like, come on, what the fuck?
Well,
like,
and yeah, and at what point is it just like, what is our place? What is it like? How is any of this our place?
Yeah,
I think there's a degree to which we have made promises to specific groups of people who held up their end of the bargain, and we owe them something. That does not mean we owe being in Iraq forever. It doesn't mean we owe airstrikes in against Iranian backed militias in Syria. It doesn't mean that. It means that there is some level of support we owe specific groups of people who have done things at our request.
I mean,
because otherwise they'll get murdered. You
there's
know?
A mess we've contributed to.
Yeah.
You have a moral obligation to take care of certain people, you know, and
there's,
you. And yes.
But yeah, just more often than not, the
but that's a justification that's used, or it's
right.
Not
that's
even
that's what you say when you want to stay there, when you want to in order to, like, pay these people back or to help these people, we're gonna bomb these people. It's never
and I don't
anything
see
other
that,
than that. Yeah,
I don't see that the bombing ever helped. Yeah, well, you know, my example of what I think this can look like in a way that is not horrifically toxic is we were helping to keep a sizable chunk of northeast Syria from getting bombed by having, like, a couple of dozen special forces guys in tents, because then the Turks wouldn't start fucking shit up. And since we pulled those guys out and have them just protecting oil fields, 250,000 people have been forced out of their homes and thousands have been killed. Wow. In the
how are the oil
fighting.
Fields though?
The oil fields are fine.
Thank you very much.
And in terms of what am I, broadly speaking, not going to complain about my tax dollars going to? Well, keeping some guys in a tent so that bombs aren't falling. That's fine. I am going to bitch about my tax dollars going to bombing another militia somewhere in the desert that will just spark a series of, like, it's. I think when you talk about what do we owe people that we've made promises to, and what does that extend to? I think some of it relies on whether or not they have succeeded in doing anything that can be supported. So I don't support keeping any U.S. forces in Afghanistan, because the government, like, there's nothing to support there. The Taliban has won. All we're doing is extending pointless bloodshed by staying there, and we're not going to help anything. Northern Iraq is a broadly more functional than the rest of the country, than the government in Baghdad. And I think we owe them at least enough support to say, hey, don't fuck with these people. There are I don't think it, you don't have to bomb anybody over this. You just have to say, no, you can't do that, government in Baghdad.
We do, though. We do have to bomb. That's the thing. I feel like we talk about this. I think we talk about this before, where it's like this a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, it's like that's just what it always leads to.
It's not the like we have stepped in between the government in Baghdad and the government in Erbil in a couple of situations in the past, and I don't know. I mean, I'm also
dumb as shit, so I just think
he really is.
I can attest to that.
I think there's an option between just saying like, well, we fucked everything up, and we're not going to keep fucking things up. So let's just abandon everyone. And an option of like, well, the only way to continue having an impact here is to bomb people. I don't think those are our only two options.
Yeah.
Because we have pull in terms of trade. We have pull in terms of economic aid dollars, funding dollars. We were not bombing Turkey to stop them from coming into northeast Syria, right? Turkey is reliant upon us in a lot of ways. And so while we were keeping troops there, they weren't going to start shit. We didn't have to bomb them over that. I don't know. I don't like any of these options, but I do also think there are specific people, namely the Kurds, that we owe something, right?
Yeah.
'Cause they did the thing that we asked. And I just have an issue with abandoning them entirely. But I don't know. Whatever happens is going to be dumb and ineffective, so I guess I will continue to oppose it because it's dumb and ineffective. I'm not saying I'm in any way supportive of what Biden just did in Syria or will be supportive of any of his foreign policy in Syria or Iraq, because I doubt that I will.
Yeah, the machine's not going to stop.
The machine's not going to stop, and so I will continue to oppose the machine. I just think there's a way in which we could not abandon people who have, broadly speaking, done us a solid and also maintained a decent place for people in that region to live comparatively to people in other parts. I think it's called the
American way, Robert. All right. We get the thing we want and then we say no, thank you for whatever else you need. That's just how it goes.
I know. I'm just so
called friendship.
It's called bad friendship.
Yeah. We're, I don't know.
You know, that toxic friend you can't shake. Mm-hmm. That's America.
Yeah. It's this thing that is always frustrating to me. I'm not willing to say there's no way in which, I don't know. I've met too many people who have been like, well, my family all got murdered. I sure wish someone had helped us out. And I don't want to say, well, yeah, there's nothing anyone could have done to save your family's life. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that things could be done. Because things have been done at specific points in the past that have mitigated historic tragedies, which doesn't mean that I think it's likely that the right thing will be done or that Joe Biden knows how to do it or that a military industrial complex that's geared entirely towards profit is ever going to make the right decision based on people's lives. Get frustrated with the idea that
people's lives are not actually thing that. Yeah. Joe Biden or the American government are worried about over there.
No, they sure aren't.
We've really covered a wide range of topics this
real week. Hodgepodge.
I think we
really
can all
went
agree
on a journey.
Near a tandem or bust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went on a real near a tangent there.
Ooh, nice. That was good. Wow. Mm-hmm. Really way to bring
for
it home.
Days for that.
Wow.
One.
I wrote it down. Months ago.
Got it tattooed on your inner
arm.
That's
right.
So
now I
got to
get it removed, but it's fine.
It's like
worth it.
Put some Sharpie on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
all right, guys. You can check us out online at Worst Year Pod on social medias. And you know how to find us individually. Ooh. I'm not going to state all of our handles. I'm just not going to do it.
Don't do it, Kate.
But I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Mm-hmm. I like your faces. Mm-hmm. I don't know most of them, but I like them.
Your love ears
them.
Are good.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate.
I appreciate.
And that's the motherfucking
next
episode.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel.
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.